This is CliffCentral.com.
Sanmunan Nonke, welcome to the show. Thanks to Gaz and the gang. Back again tomorrow. Rorisang.
Yo, leke.
Ten leke.
Shape tada.
Hey, Robert Smanat.
Robert's a shapo for
you
too.
I love your pajamas that you've brought into studio today. It's fantastic. It's a very sexy style for you. It's a good look.
Yeah, leave me in my pajamas alone, man. By the way, have you seen the cool thing Learn Pitori on Twitter?
Oh no! Oh, this is there's an entire
it wasn't started by me, but there's an entire introduction to my Pitori on Twitter. I've been telling you guys. This is the next best thing, and now look, it's blown up. It's all over Twitter.
So is there, what's that thing called? What's that thing that you taught me a little while ago? Piti piti, or what's it? Oh man, I'm gonna have to remember.
Yeah, you're gonna have to remember. Yeah,
it's you said the saying to me, and then you said you can't quite explain it unless you're from Pretoria.
Like, papar.
Is that papar? Papar. What does papar mean? Is it there?
No, actually, we should add that to the dictionary.
Frankly speaking, we should add that to the dictionary.
Yeah, we were driving in the street, and papar, a cat came out of nowhere, and we almost crashed. Yeah.
All right. So listen, last week we had a crazy conversation with Makosi Khoza. It was incredible. What a
very fascinating
conversation with her. We went on for ages, and we decided to actually go on after the show because it was just such a brilliant conversation. I actually think round two is even better than round one.
Oh, absolutely. I think she kind of began to gain her confidence or whatever it was that she was getting.
She just lost it. She was like, okay, I'm done with you now.
And she says, you know what? What's the point? Either way, I think at some stage she realized, I'm going to get some of the stuff I've said in round one, I'm going to get disciplined for. I might as well just do this. I might as well do this properly. Now we're hearing talk that she might be going into disciplinary.
So please, without further ado, if you haven't listened to round one of Makosi Khoza, do yourself a favor. It is fantastic. I had so many people phoning me, Rory, and going, wow, now why isn't that woman our president?
Mm.
And I sincerely agree. I think she's amazing in her sincerity. I think she just is a straight talker. And I think if you enjoyed round one, then this is definitely going to be a great, great, great round two. And if you missed it, just go to cliffcentral.com/frankly speaking and it will be there.
Yeah, I think, without further ado, let's link everyone up to the conversation after the conversation. The conversation that we had with Dr. Makosi Khoza, an ANC member of parliament who has been very outspoken in recent times about the immorality of the ANC and the insistence that parliamentarians do a secret ballot. So over to round two.
Enjoy.
In round one of our conversation, you ended it off by saying, why did I leave Akgang, and so on, which is an interesting conversation. I wonder whether there is space in politics for people like, for example, yourself. Politics operates according to a certain system. And in order to change the system, there's a big question around whether you have to be on the inside to change it or whether you have to be on the outside to change it. Now, from your point of view, what is the best way of changing the current trajectory of the ANC, inside or out?
Okay, let me speak as an academic here. Mm. Okay. My view is that liberation movements are relevant to take us to the first stage of liberation, and that is getting systems in place. Like, for example, in South Africa, we can now vote, and remember, the majority of the people were disenfranchised, and getting the new constitution in place, getting the new laws in place, and putting together the policies that are speaking to, that are informed by the mission of the liberation movement, such as ensuring that, everyone is equal before the law and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't think that liberation movements, and this is really, really based on observations of what has been happening in the continent. I think liberation movements tend to be stuck, I'm talking about as an organization, tend to be stuck in the glories of yesteryear. And I don't think they are able to adjust into becoming a political party as opposed to being a liberation movement. I think they expect the liberation movement culture when they are a ruling party. And I think it just doesn't sit together because, you know, during liberation movement, you are fighting that ruling party. You are fighting the nationalist party. Now you are the one that is the ruling party. So I'm saying, I don't think liberation movements, if I were to put this numerically, I would say a liberation movement, maybe 10 years is okay. Post 10 years after independence, they begin to fumble. And that is why in Ghana, the political party in Ghana is less than, Kwame Nkrumah's party is less than 10%. And I understand that even in Kenya, it's the same thing. So that's the reality that I think we need to come to terms with.
A lot of questions around the current state of the ANC with these Gupta leaked emails. I'm sure you're aware of them over and over and over again. Give us your sense. There's some questions here on social media around resignations, and there's a long list of them. So let me ask you. Mosebenze Zwane, should he resign as the Minister of Mineral Resources in the light of last week's Daily Maverick discussions or revelations in terms of the Gupta leaks and how there was a funding of a wedding here in South Africa? Should he resign? Should Jacques Wessels and Moses Hosanna from KPMG also resign, given their involvement in this whole debacle? And this is a long question on WeChat here, but should Lynn Brown also resign as Minister for Public Enterprises for lying to Parliament about Eskom payments to Trillion? Your thoughts generally?
Let me say this to you. One, I don't have the authority to say certain minister must resign. I'm in the political, I'm part of the African National Congress. However, I do think that if the ANC wants to survive and wants to modernize, the ANC has got to take a decisive action on all those that are implicated. A decisive action is not just about saying establish a commission here and there, but take a decision, because that is subdelegating a decision. To me, I think the ANC is a political party. These are their members. What is it doing about that? Are their acts consistent with the ANC constitution? If not, then why is the ANC, you know, not bringing all those people within a disciplinary committee? The other processes of commissions are other processes. They must not be mixed with the organizational processes. That's the only way you are going to root out the rot, I'm afraid, if the ANC does not take action on this. It will continue to spiral downwards.
It's interesting, Rory. I want to bring you in a little bit here. We've got a question from Luke Jordan on WeChat, talking a little bit about the secret ballots, and we saw what happened in the Constitutional Court. We also saw at the ANC policy conference, Jacob Zuma saying, why do you keep going to government when you get a bad answer at Parliament, which is a very interesting space to discuss. Luke has a question for you, Dr. Khoza, which says, if the president is established of a secret ballot to remove a president, do you think anything to stop national politics going the way of Mogale City? And for those of you who don't know Mogale City, there was the whole thing about a mayor was removed by secret ballot, where people paid off certain members to vote in a certain way. So is the secret ballot the way to go? We know we've had 7 secret ballots of votes of no confidence, and not secret, but votes of no confidence that didn't go the way that everyone thought they would have or should have or could have against President Zuma since 2014. Do you think that the secret ballot's going to do anything different? Does it set a bad precedent?
The thing that we have to understand about the ANC is that we believe in democratic centralism. Okay. That's what the ANC believes in. But there are times when a matter, because to me, what I don't find consistent with the ANC application of policies is the fact that when we had a vote on the pro, those who were pro-abortion and those that were pro-life, the ANC allowed members to vote with their conscience. But now this is a moral issue. To me, it's a moral issue because it's not just about an individual. To me, it's not just about the figure called the President Zuma. It's about the office and its implication in a range of other things that have happened. I mean, we've been dealing with scandal after scandal after scandal after scandal. Mm. To me, that is a moral question. It's no longer just about whether you are a rebel that is insubordinate, no longer forming part of party discipline. To me, party discipline is also being able to stand for the organizational values that you were socialized in. And the organizational values that I was socialized in, I was socialized into believing that you can never do something that is against society. Now, on the 7th of April, we've had society standing up. To me, that is a moral issue. It's no longer just those 7 votes. And I think even the president is missing it. If he keeps on talking about those 7 votes in parliament, those 7 votes were merely amongst us as members of parliament. Now this thing has been escalated to society. It's no longer about the 400 members. It is now about the people standing up and saying, you 400 members, we want you to vote in this particular way. If you do so, do it at your own peril. To me, that is what makes it different.
So you're saying that you were one of the people that voted for President Zuma to stay in those non-secret ballot votes of no confidence?
And let me tell you, I am part of the ANC, and in the ANC, once a decision, when you are a collective, no matter, democratic centralism means that once the center or once the higher structure has made a decision, a pronouncement, and it has been allowed to be debated, and probably you have had your own dissatisfaction or your own opposition with that, but you are in the minority. And this matter has been subjected to a vote within internal structures. If you are now defeated, you can't then go out there and vote against a party. Mm-hmm. But I am saying that was the situation then during those 7 votes. Now this is different. This is no longer about that ANC, democratic centralism. These are South African voters. Remember, the ANC, people who voted the ANC into power are not the 1 million, less than 1 million members that we have. Mm. We were voted by over 11 million South Africans. Now, the people that marched are not necessarily ANC members. They are not card-carrying members of the ANC. And I want to argue that they may be ANC voters. And how do I defy ANC voters? So that is where the moral question comes in. And my frustration is that I think the leadership keeps on saying this is coming from the opposition, therefore it should not be supported. But I am saying, yes, the opposition might be seizing the opportunity, but to me, in a democratic, in a developmental state, and this is my understanding of a developmental state is not oppositional. A developmental state is developmental. In other words, in as much as I need your vote as the DA, when I wanted to push a particular policy, like the NDP, which was supported by many parties. So I expect that if the DA one day is coming with something that makes sense, then I should vote with it if it makes sense to me. It should not be, and I don't think the ANC was established in order to be oppositional. Otherwise, why are we calling ourselves Democrats? If you are a Democrat, you don't believe that you are right. And by the way, Socrates says, if the day you become aware that you don't know, that is the beginning of your wisdom. And if you keep on saying you know it all, that is your downfall.
Yeah.
In other words, once you say you know it all, that equals arrogance.
Well, pride comes before the fall, and it looks like the ANC is consumed by a lot of pride. You will remember that after the municipal elections, there was a lot of talk about how the ANC needs to reflect. This is a wake-up call. We need to go back to our people. We need to understand. To what extent was that just talk after an election? But it's
just
now it's now
a question?
After the municipal election, the most recent municipal election, and the results that came through it, part of which was the loss of some of the key metros, Nelson Mandela Metro, for example, Tshwane, for example. There was talk from the ANC about this is a wake up call for us. This is a moment of reflection. For the ANC. To what extent do you think the ANC has made progress in that regard, or did it become business as usual as soon as it was forgotten?
Well, I may not say this, I may not tell you who the leaders are, but I've had leaders who actually saw no problem with that we lost. They think we won a lot of municipalities. And some of us, unfortunately, you know, if we are exposed into macroeconomics and you understand a bit of economics, you know, that is an ill-informed victory. You know, how do you celebrate you losing Johannesburg that has sent in, which as the richest square mile in Africa. How do you celebrate that? How do you not feel uncomfortable that you've lost it when out of 8 metropolitan councils, you've lost 5 in 10 years? How do you celebrate that? And the only metropolitan council that is actually a metro in the true sense of the word, in the sense that it meets the criteria of being a category A municipality. To be a category A municipality, I'm a municipal specialist, by the way, I'm the former CEO of SALGA. You need to have conurbations, in other ways, in economic activity centers, a string of them. Now, you have Bloemfontein, which is your Mangaung. Mangaung, it shouldn't be a metro.
Yes.
You know, it's probably more like Maritzburg. I don't see it as a metro. You have Buffalo City, the only metro in real terms, the only metro that the ANC still controls is eThekwini. And that eThekwini, we lost 15 seats.
I'm interested, we've got someone on WeChat here, Kevin, saying, does it concern you as a former deputy mayor of Pietermaritzburg that Des van Rooyen is now the minister responsible for local government and therefore has the oversight responsibility of institutions responsible for water, sanitation and other essential services to people across the country? Does that concern you at all?
That's a very difficult question. One, because I'm a member of the ANC and I'm in parliament. And I wouldn't like to comment specifically on the individual Des Van Rooyen.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is very simple. I honestly think that because I don't sit in that committee on local government, and as a former deputy mayor of Pietermaritzburg and chair of EXCO of that municipality, I still believe that we have not invested enough in people who have who are passionate about local government.
Mm.
And I'm one of those people who really studied so hard the issue of local government. I mean, there is no place I never went to. People would remember even the book, the first book of local government in South Africa, Being Yourself, Representing Others, that I authored. I mean, I do believe that I wish I could have been utilized in the space of local governance, because I think I understand the complexities of that environment, not in the capacity of minister, maybe in the capacity of the chair, probably, of local government, you know, because I would know exactly how to hold certain people accountable because it's the environment that I know. Mm. So I'm saying sometimes when ministers are appointed, they are never necessary, not just about Des Van Rooyen. We never really apply our minds into matching the skills, the passion, and the drive for that specific department.
Dr. Khoza, you're touching on local government, and we've just had the Auditor General come out with almost devastating results, and a continuation of devastating results on the state of our municipalities. So clean audits only represent only 19% of local government expenditure. 19% of all the money that local government spends have been classified as clean or represent clean audits. In the 2015-2016 financial year, municipalities incurred 50% increase in irregular expenditure. Yet we've got this policy framework, we've got PFMA, we've got the Municipal Systems Act, we've got all of those. So we've got the policy environment, we've got the policies that should be able to curb what's happening. So what now, what else then must happen? You said the SCOPA, in spite of having the policies, having SCOPA, this continues. So what must change to make sure that, because this is the coal face of service delivery, and if so much money is not being used in the way it should be used, these are people who are ultimately suffering.
That's a very difficult question. But what I can tell you is that leadership is everything.
Mm.
Leadership is everything. And I am saying that within the context of saying, remember that Auditor General pronouncements are merely about compliance issues.
Mm.
So that's the basic minimum you need.
Mm.
You have not gone into the next level, which assesses the delivery, the service delivery,
the quality of the spend,
and so forth. You are merely talking about compliance issues here. Are you able to produce evidence that the money that you have, that has been appropriated, has been spent in accordance with what has been agreed upon in terms of the budget that has been approved by you as a municipality?
Mm.
These are the basic things that we are talking about.
Mm.
And 23 years later, if we are still talking about basic things like that, it scares me.
Yes.
And I am more concerned because I think local government has a very, very important role to play. By the way, local government is about everything. You are born in a local municipality.
Mm.
You grow up in a local municipality. You go to school in a local municipality, and you are buried in a local municipality.
Mm.
In other words, a municipality is the expression of your life as a person.
Mm.
There is no place called national.
Mm.
National is just an academic geographic expression. Mm. But at the end of the day, where you are going to sleep tonight, you are going to be sleeping at a municipality.
Mm. Isn't it... I just have to say this, the feeling that I'm getting from this, We could change so much in government if we just had passionate people doing the things that they need, that they're passionate about, right?
I disagree. And I disagree on the basis that I've seen a lot of people, young people especially, passionate about wanting to make a difference, go into the public system and either come out feeling very depressed in the sense that their passion alone was unable to make the changes that were required. Young people going in or getting captured within the rot of that system.
So that's which
why,
one is you?
That's why I'm testing. I was ejected. You know I was I was kicked out. So beyond just passion, what is it going to take to move beyond having good policies, having good leadership, having passion? What is it going to take? Because you're right. This is probably why the votes shifted so dramatically at a local government level, because people feel it. They feel it in their pocket when the electricity rates are increasing. They feel it when lights and potholes and so on.
Yeah.
So they feel it, and so they make those decisions more easily than they do at a national level when you're discussing philosophies and ideologies. What must happen?
Let me tell you, last week I was actually at the public service. I was addressing at the public service day, and a journalist, a young journalist, asked me a question similar to yours, which I think is a very, very important question that we are asking. And I'm happy that you are actually saying passion is not enough. Because this journalist said to me, you know, I'm a young person, but it never even crosses my mind that I must go and work at the public service. Because I've seen people going there, having their dreams crushed, coming out so demoralized or being assimilated into the system. Now, my answer to you is that, and that is what I would love my ANC to get right. The ANC made a very, 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 very important commitment. When the ANC said, declared repeatedly over and over and over again, over 100 years, generation after generation, that it is a leader of society. When the leader of society is implicated, its leaders are implicated in over 200,000 emails of corrupt activities. You are now sitting with a leader of society that is no longer conflicted.
Yes.
A leader of society, remember, and there is one good philosopher who puts it very well. If you are a liberation movement, or you become a state, you shape the culture of society. In societies where there is fear, you will find that it is the state that makes those people fearful. And sometimes you may find dictators being voted back in over and over again. And that's because the leadership has already defined what is right and what is wrong.
What does the future of the ANC look like? Because what you're saying to me, the feeling I'm getting is that philosophically now, your ANC has died. What is the future ANC, of the ANC? ANC?
The ANC is bleeding to death. The ANC is bleeding to death. I am giving it, as a member of the ANC, the benefit of doubt. I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to be the outcome of this policy conference that we are having in July 2017. I'm also looking forward to the outcome of the December 2017 conference. And the way I am speaking now, I am speaking because I wish they could feel what I feel and see what I see and hear what I hear from young people, from South African citizens, from patients in hospitals that I visit on a daily basis. If they don't listen to that, I think it will be time for me to say, I think my ANC is now in its comatose state, and I don't think it will be resuscitated. So I am hoping that between now and December 2017, the ANC may still be resuscitated. I hope that there will be more courageous men and women who are going to be able to stand up and say, not in my name.
So it sounds like the ANC has abdicated its role as moral leader in society and only occupies a positional leadership role right now, just by virtue of being the party in government. We asked in round one of this conversation with you around this ideological vacuum that seems to exist. What is it going to take to restore ANC's moral leadership within the South Africa? It's a very big vacuum that is now, and it sounds, you know, when people think just remove the president, but the president was elected by a system, and that system itself, it means he is a reflection of the values that have now begun to take hold within that system. So there are a lot of people, if you're going to look at it from a people point of view, that you'd have to remove and almost insert an entirely new person who hasn't been, you know, you can't put new wine into old wine skins. So you almost need an entirely new wine skin. What is it going to take? It feels almost like an impossible task.
There is something, I'm hoping that if you visit my Facebook page, there is an article I wrote today, and I was responding to Karabo. I sent a photograph of myself and Winnie Mandela, and we were together at the ANC policy conference, and I was saying to them, hey, I was with Winnie, and Mom Winnie was asking me, you know, she was like saying, you know, you represent the legacy that we are leaving behind. And I was saying to her, thank you for having given me that fearless spirit. I think you have to be blamed for that. So I shared that thing. Then people then started sending, Karabo then sends another photograph where Winnie Mandela was bringing the president and Cyril Ramaphosa. I'm not sure if you've seen that photograph. She was bringing them together during this policy conference. And she asked me, what is my interpretation of that? And I think I made a very, and this was in response to Karabo. And this is just Makosi Khoza interpretation. Whatever that I'm saying here is not a party position. It's my interpretation. I said it to her, you know, to me, that picture, the way I read it, you know, like when you are reading an artist's painting, you've got to give it your own expression.
Right.
I said to me, what it was saying was that I think the ANC, if it is serious about its survival and where it wants to go, and is serious about modernizing, it's got to give the baton to the new generation that is morally grounded, the new generation that is younger, the new generation that optimizes the prosperous South Africa that we all want, the new generation that is optimizes the age of information highway and algorithms, the new generation that is not going to be just celebrating the glories of yesteryear, but the generation that is going to be looking forward to making sure that by even right now, starting today, by 2050, it is estimated that there will be 2 billion people in Africa. If we are not empathetic to those young people, who are 30 years and have never worked in their lives, then where is this country going? So I was saying, I wish the whole leadership could take collective responsibility and say, we are stepping aside.
Everyone?
The whole leadership starting from
yes,
which
I
level?
I'm saying especially
NEC
those
or
that
top six?
Are... No, I'm not talking about just the top six. But, I mean, where you are saying, if the ANC right now, where I am, and I am talking authoritatively, nobody can take that away from me. I've been with this organization since I was 12. I'm 47 now. And I am saying, if the ANC is serious about the future of this country and is serious about it's this country people. And about young people and everybody and about shaping the moral authority of this country and getting back to its developmental rail track that it has promised, it will have to say, for the first time now, we are going to say, we want the leaders that are, at least let's look at our leaders being dominated by people that are not above 60.
But that
and secondly, we are also saying, but not just the age, because the age may be misleading.
Yes.
What if you are bringing all these young people who are conflicted, who are cited in all these Gupta League things, and who are getting all these monies and whatnot? It's not going to help.
It's not good enough.
It's not going to help. The ANC, if it is saying it is capable of self-cleaning, then it's got to understand that their self-cleansing comes with the responsibility of leadership, taking collective responsibility of saying we have failed the mission of the ANC right now, and we have failed the mission of South Africa. And therefore, we would like to take part in correcting and redesigning the moral compass of the ANC so that it is in sync with its developmental agenda.
What's your comment on, because you make reference every time, or a lot of the time when you speak about your point of reference, which is that you are educated, you've studied this, you've studied that. How do you feel about the comment clever blacks? Because it's almost a chain that gets put even on young people's ability to express themselves because they don't want to be seen to be clever blacks. What do you make of that statement?
By the way, one of the reasons why I'm speaking out, it's because it's cool to be clever, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because you can be critical.
Yes.
And it's cool to be clever because you cannot accept something that is wrong, fundamentally wrong. And I write. And they know, even when the leadership told me that, listen, we told the Youth League to be out of your case, but you must stop writing. I said, that will be the death of Makosi Khoza, and I have not stopped writing.
So the president,
and that's it's nice to be clever blacks. I'm hoping everyone is listening at all, because you really, you know, let me tell you something about freedom. Freedom is not necessarily the low-cost housing that you get. It's not about the electricity that you get. It's also about being able to be who you want to be. It's being able to identify with your country. It's being able to take part in your country without fearing that you might be, punished for saying what you think is taking your country forward. So to me, being a clever black, wow, you've defeated Verwoerd's prophecy.
Plan. So
be
are you
clever
saying, yes.
as a black and be proud that you are clever. There is nothing wrong with being
so
a clever black.
So are you saying
black.
That President Jacob Zuma was aligning himself with Verwoerd's philosophy?
No,
when he tried
I am not saying he's aligning himself
being
with
clever
Verwoerd.
As a black person.
I'm not saying he's aligning himself with Verwoerd, but all I can say is that if he is directing at clever blacks, and I'm one of those clever blacks, hello, Mr. President,
yes.
I am happy to be clever, and that is why I went to school.
It reminds me of being black and proud. We are black and proud. So if you're joining us, we are speaking to Dr. Makosi Khoza, It's been a riveting second part of this show.
You got to listen to the first part.
It was, if you really want to understand the context.
Oh man, I feel like we're captured. Just by the way, we're captured by Dr. Mukos.
No, you're captured. You said we are captured.
But that's a nice capture.
We are captured. They're going to be emails now. They're going to come out.
That's ever that not.
Of course, the emails. Of course, the emails.
All capturing feels good.
But I'm capturing you to become free to express yourself and to tell me that I'm wrong.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, welcome to the world of the captured, Andrew. As we begin to wrap up, let's speak, Doc, about morality and values. You've said that when truth decomposes, duplicity thrives. If we're going to begin to, and you've spoken passionately about what needs to happen if the ANC is going to self-correct, but is it better to affect this change from the inside or the outside? That is a big question. We have seen people leaving the ANC. One can argue that the most recent significant force of change on the ANC has been the EFF, which is former ANC members who have gone out to the outside and have begun to speak in certain language that you see the ANC increasingly adopting. This radical economic transformation, one might even argue, is a response to EFF almost radicalizing on the outside. What is your view around whether the best way to change the system, whether it's the ANC, whether the best way of changing the ANC is from the inside or outside, or even if not just the ANC, young people thinking about politics in general, is it best to be on the inside or the outside if you're going to change it? Because we've seen and we spoke about those young people that have gone in with great passion, wanting to change it on the inside, ultimately either becoming despondent or being captured by the rot within the inside. Again, if you're on the outside, you don't have access to the powers and the structures that can effect the change. So where's the best place for young South Africans to begin to effect this change?
Okay, I think let's not create the impression that if you are outside, you can effect a change inside. And the reason why, especially if we base it on our own experience in South Africa. In South Africa, we've had COPE that broke away from the ANC. Did they change the ANC from outside? They didn't. They started fighting over leadership squabbles. And why? That's because you get out not necessarily because of principles, but because you are following a particular personality. And same thing with the EFF. The EFF, there is Malema, and suddenly we think Malema can become the moral authority when he amassed so much wealth. Within a very short space of time when he was within the ANC Youth League as the president. And suddenly we think that Malema can become the moral authority of South Africa. Malema was fired in the ANC. Is he changing it? No, I think what is happening here, yes, he might be unsettling the ANC because he understands. When you are talking about patronage politics, he's a beneficiary of it. And he therefore understands exactly how it operates. So he's operating from that advantageous point. But is his land, expropriation of land without compensation and land invasion going to help this country? I do not believe so. And there are two things that Malema and Zuma share. One of the things that happened with President Zuma, which I think is unfortunate, is the fact that we began to call him Baba. We never called Madiba Baba. We called him Madiba.
Yeah.
By his clan name.
Yes.
We called Thabo Mbeki TM. And with Comrade Zuma, we are calling him Baba. We are now making him some figure that is somewhere up there that is not necessarily accountable. I mean, it's very hard. You must understand this within African culture.
Yes.
It's very difficult to keep your father accountable.
Yes.
And now, if it's your comrade, you can still go back to the principles.
Mm.
How do I hold you accountable on the basis of the babahood?
Yes.
I mean, really.
Yes.
I can't hold you accountable for
that.
Yes.
You know? So I am saying, but if you are a president, I can hold you accountable.
Mm. Yes.
And if I call you TM, I'm saying I'm bringing this with your own identity as a person.
Yes.
So I am saying to you, that is why we found that people like Comrade Nelson Mandela were able to exit without drama. Mm. We also saw with TM, with whatever imperfections that he may have had, I respect that man. Mm. When he had the opportunity to fight back, because there was nothing that was pushing him to not to finish his term.
Mm.
When the leadership approached him and said, it's time for you to go, he decided to resign. And he got out gracefully.
Mm.
Now, leaders that are elevated to that other level,
Babahood.
It's very difficult to get rid of them.
Mm.
Now, Malema is another leader who is now called the commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
Now, you are already saying this person has only 6% of the vote.
Mm.
He already has this title of commander-in-chief. And what are you going to have South Africa tomorrow? That is somebody that might rule with a decree. You wake up the following day, he has declared the state of emergency. What did you do? You allowed it. You gave him commander-in-chief. Mm. And that's what is prominent to him. A commander-in-chief is the commander of armed forces. You are bringing that military language. And that's what is a tragedy about the EFF, the commissars.
Mm.
You know, you're bringing that very militaristic language. And I'm saying, I'm not buying that story.
Mm.
So coming back to your question, I am saying, therefore, it's an illusion to think that you can change it from outside. If your motives for getting out are not in pursuit of a better good, or you are not coming with an alternative that is going to make sense. And again, I am saying, even Ramphele Ahang, I honestly do think that one of the things that I think was a tragedy with Ramphele, I honestly do think that she's an academic.
Mm.
And you see, once you are a leader, and you are just entering this game of politics,
mm.
we still want you to establish your principles.
Mm.
We want to know who you are.
Mm.
The next thing, you get assimilated, and then you backtrack. When she joined the DA, that was her suicide.
Yes.
Now, to me, I think you don't do that. If you want to be an outstanding leader, you become like Nelson Mandela.
Mm.
Makosi Khoza may be a lone voice today.
Mm.
And Madiba, it took him 30 years. And he was very consistent with his messaging. Even when he was offered a mention and whatnot, to say, if you decide that you are getting out, if you decide to abandon this thing, we will do this and that for you. He did not have instant gratification.
Mm.
Our problem is that we are short-termists. If I get out maybe tomorrow, I would never want people to follow Makosi Khoza.
Mm.
Follow principles.
Yes.
Because if you follow principles, if Makosi Khoza is also doing something wrong, she must be held to account and she must be fired.
So let's ask you a question. The vote of no confidence has been tabled. The next one. Does that confirm the way you'll be voting in the next
Let me tell you what I want with that vote of no confidence. And the reason why I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to be voting. I can tell you now that I wrote to the speaker. And I said, Madam Speaker, I've been threatened. And I implore upon you to make this vote of no confidence secret.
Mm.
Consider some of us and other members who may not be able to exercise what they are supposed to do based on this or on the fact that they may be intimidated. The court has laid the ball on your court.
Mm.
So I'm not going to be sabotaging. I have asked the Deputy Speaker, and it will be, I've been in politics in Danam for a very long time, from when I was 12. I'm not about to share with you how am I going to vote. But I am going to tell you that whatever decisions I make, my moral conscience is always at the center. I can never betray myself. I can never betray my grandmother, who saw a Nubian queen, a queen of justice in me.
Let's, unfortunately, again, we found ourselves running out of time in the second part of this. If you've joined the show a little late, you've got to check out. There's two parts to this podcast. We are sitting with Dr. Makosi Khoza, and I think, Rory, we are both captured because we're not asking the hard questions, because the truth that you speak is just incredible. It's been fascinating conversation. Lastly, as we wrap up, if 2019, if the end of 2017 comes and the results don't go your way and you are disillusioned about the ANC and where it's going, what next for Dr. Makosi Khoza? Where does she go? How does she find her way in the world?
You see, I'm a mother, né? I have children. When I want a particular outcome, I devote myself to that outcome. And when that outcome fails, that's the only time I take a decision. What you want me to do, you want me to negate what I've said. I've said we have this policy conference. We have the December elective conference. What we do at the end of December will define the moment. Probably it will also define where Makosi Khoza goes. So why don't we give this process a chance? Let's give this process a chance, and let's hope that if they have the ears and they can feel what I feel, when they can see what I see, and they can touch what I touch, and they can, you know, I mean, I'm saying they can think the way I think. I'm hoping that we may have a different outcome. Otherwise, the word miracle would not exist. If miracles don't happen, let's hope for the miracle in December.
So miracles are it.
I've just miracles got one last question. Last question. So
I thought that was the last question.
I thought that was the last question.
Why haven't they killed you? We're seeing killings in Richmond, mayors, you know. So it seems in South Africa it's very easy to dispose of a person. And you are becoming, let's call it, a thorn in the side of some people. Why do you think they haven't yet killed you?
Why was I not killed during the 1980s?
They tried, though.
I was 14 years when I was in prison. When Stello Dlomo, that young man in Soweto, died, was killed, I was in prison. I've survived numerous attempts. There's one thing you can't threaten me with. Don't threaten me with death. Because I honestly believe that if you allow to be intimidated, you are actually signing yourself out of relevance. However, I am not a suicide bomber. I love life. And I want it to live. I take precautions, security precautions. But what a way to die. If you die for what you believe in. Remember Socrates?
Yes.
When he had that moment. When he could have just escaped in Athens. He could have just left. But he said, I want to subject myself to the laws of this country. Remember, we've signed this social contract. And what a way to die. When you die and you know exactly that I am dying because I love my people. And I want young people to know it's good to be in pursuit of truth, irrespective of the consequences. And that's what I live for. Madiba did it. And many other people did it. Chris Hani did it. There are so many people. Amika Cabral did it. And he was assassinated in 1973. Guess what? You can assassinate a person.
But you can't assassinate.
But you cannot assassinate the wisdom that comes with those people. Today, Jesus Christ is one of the most celebrated people on planet Earth.
Mm.
By the way, at that time, he had a very small, very, very few following.
He didn't have social media. He didn't have Facebook.
He didn't have social media.
He walked everywhere he went.
He didn't, yes. And we don't even know where his grave is up until this day.
Yes.
Did he die?
Mm.
No.
Mm.
Do I care?
Mm.
To be honest with you, as long as I'm happy with what I say, and I know that what I say is what I represent, and that is what I was taught by Madiba, and is what I was taught by Charlotte Maxeke, and is what I've learned from all the revolutionaries of our time, Amica Cabral being one of them, Franz Fanon, those are the people that I live with on a daily basis, Maya Angelou, and so many people.
Mm.
So I am saying to you, yes, Martin Luther the King was assassinated, but did he die? I don't believe so.
Wow.
Thank you.
And on that note, Andrew.
That's it. That's where we leave that.
Let's get out of here, man.
Wow. Makosa, thank you so much. Okay. Doctor. Doctor, you've been preaching. You've been preaching. Thank you so much for your time. And if you've missed any of this podcast or the last one, you got to go and give yourself a bath in being alive, in recommitting yourself to this country, and listen to what this wonderful person has to say. I'm certainly recommitted.
Dr. Fukosa, go forth, fear not. You've got people behind you. You've got this, and I imagine there are a lot of young people that are backing you.
To be honest with you, I am very humbled by the manner in which many people of South Africa have come to my support. I received a lot of support from the South African Women's Collective, Barbara Masekela, women like that. I mean, who doesn't want to be getting an endorsement from Gertrude Shop? Those are the women that groomed me. When they called me in and they actually issued a statement to say, we understand where you are. And today, I had another signature. Mam Winnie Mandela.
Mm.
I mean, when that woman grabbed me by hand today, I felt like at least I'm not betraying the ANC mission.
Mm.
I feel vindicated. Thank you.
Amen. Mm. Andrew, let's really get out of here.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Frankly Speaking. We will see you again. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, Vito.
This is CliffCentral.com.